You're listening to Stateside. I'm Cynthia Canty. It is pretty tough to wrap your mind around the price tag for Flint's lead and water disaster. There's the $58 million the state of Michigan has already spent on filters, bottled water, and medical care and testing. There's the still undetermined cost of replacing the water lines and the pipes damaged by the corrosive Flint River water. But we cannot overlook the social costs. That warning comes from Peter Munig. He's professor of health policy and management at Columbia University's Mailman School of Public Health. And his warning is in a letter he wrote in the journal Health Affairs. Peter Munig is with us now. Welcome, Peter.
Hello.
First of all, what exactly are social costs?
Social costs sort of reflect what everybody in society has to pay for something. So regardless of who pays, you might think about a government cost as something that would happen to a specific government institution, or a corporate cost as separate, but societal cost is just every cost that anybody can incur.
What kind? Could you break down what those elements might look like?
We're looking at lost productivity costs. We're looking at incarceration costs. That's a big one. And then we're looking at costs associated with use of welfare services, things like that.
What do you then calculate as a social cost of the Flint lead crisis?
For each kid exposed over their lifetime, we figure it comes out to about $50,000.
All right. Can you help me understand the headline that I saw that said $395 million?
What that is it's the average kid over their entire lifetime. That includes higher welfare use, criminal justice systems costs, economic productivity losses that are associated with the neurological damage that occurs in children that are exposed to lead. You can imagine these kids are going to have a harder time in school and therefore have a harder time graduating from high school. And when you don't graduate from high school, it sort of sets off a cascade of things. It's harder to find a high-paying job. You end up needing to use more federal welfare program services like food stamps. All of these things sort of add up over time.
It was kind of a jolt as I was reading about your study. I think a lot of people who are not in public health are not aware of this epidemiological measure known as quality adjusted life years, a year's worth of exposures resulting in years of perfect health loss. That really hits at home in kind of a real human way.
Yeah, the quality is a really powerful measure of health because it not only measures life lost, but it also measures the damages that happen to people's health.
And your calculations of the Flint exposures, so it comes up to about $395 million and 1,760 of these quality adjustment life years, equivalent to 27 children's lives.
Yes.
What does that say to legislators and policymakers?
Well, I think the main message is that it's a lot cheaper to prevent something terrible from happening than to wait until something terrible happens. And we see this over and over again in the U.S. For some reason, I sort of feel like U.S. society and U.S. policymakers are particularly resistant to investing in things that can prevent tragic events like this. So, you know, we saw this with Katrina. We see this over and over again. And people have been doing these analyses endlessly showing, you know, different ways that we could reduce exposure to children from all sorts of toxins, including lead. You know, some of them are quite expensive, but making the investment will produce returns because it will prevent terrible things from happening.
So what are some of these steps that we should get out in front of instead of waiting for some calamity to happen, a calamity like Flint?
As far as lead exposure goes, there are lots of different sources of lead exposure. But in this particular case, it was water-based. The EPA had done studies showing that you can do highly targeted lead abatement interventions where you identify those houses that are very likely to have that are very likely to be at high risk of corrosive incidents that have lead in the pipes. And, you know, replacing the pipes, it's not cheap, but it's a lot cheaper than having a kid with neurological damage.
And what can happen throughout that child's lifetime.
Exactly.
We've seen the U.S. lead health standard getting smaller and smaller over the past 50 years, no?
Mm-hmm.
But you feel what, we could and should still go lower?
Well, you know, there is no safe level of exposure to lead, but the damages associated with very, very, very small exposures is pretty small. Meaning what the average wealthier child living in a newer housing in the United States you know, they're going to have like 1 or 2 micrograms per deciliter of lead in their blood, and that's the measure of how much lead is in their blood at any time. Levels that get much higher than that, they do produce damage. So when you just go 2 or 3 times as high as that, it produces a measurable effect on the IQ and also predisposes the kid to violent behavior throughout their life. It doesn't take much to get to the point at which bad things really start to happen.
When we think of your field of health policy and management, it seems that this is something that really is not just here in Michigan. I mean, is Flint truly the tip of the proverbial iceberg for this country?
Oh, yes, definitely. In terms of U.S. infrastructure problems, we have an infrastructure that has been aging for a long time, and a lot of that infrastructure has lead in it. A lot of the infrastructure is infrastructure that's supposed to hold things up and is slowly collapsing. We saw a large highway collapse a few years ago. Every day something happens at some small, almost not newsworthy level that potentially kills somebody. I think that there's bound to be other major big events that happen in the near future just because we haven't made these kinds of investments.
What lessons should the rest of the nation take away from what happened in Flint?
Do the studies, figure out how to most cost-effectively address them, and then fund it.
Peter Munich is professor of health policy and management at Columbia University's Mailman School of Public Health. Peter, thanks for speaking with us.
Sure thing. Great to talk to you.